This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. My name is Peter Higgins and you can find me at Conquers3. And I'm here with my good colleague Peter at Wheelie Dealer on Twitter. This is podcast 55. Thank you for joining us again. Thank you for subscribing to the various channels. And thank you all for your fantastic feedback that we had after our brilliant guest Seth Levine brought us some fantastic insights regarding macroeconomics, Biggie Smalls, inflation, Bitcoin, and all manner of other things. It was a fantastic appearance by him, and I'm really, really pleased to see so many of you, ladies and gents from all over the Twitter sphere, have started following Seth on Twitter and hopefully listening to some of his own podcasts and some of his YouTube videos and visiting his website. We will, given your feedback that we've had, which has been absolutely fantastic, so thank you for that, be having Seth back on the show either later in the year or in 2022. So we're thrilled with regards to the feedback that you guys have given us. Pete, how are you doing, mate?
I'll say I'm all right, but obviously I'm not, but let's not go there because it bores me senseless. It was fantastic having Seth Levine on the last podcast, TPI 54. I'm losing it already. 54. It was just excellent to have him on, and it was I just loved the way that he fitted in with us, and it was just lovely to have him. Brilliant.
Yeah, I think this is the thing about the organic nature of how we record, and I think, at first, even Seth, when I was speaking to him and I was trying to explain to him that these podcasts are completely unscripted and, you know, I didn't have any questions for him. We're just going to go with whatever he went with and all the rest of it. Took him a little bit, you know, a bit by surprise, but he got into the swing of it and he was absolutely brilliant, to be fair. So I'm really, really pleased. We're going to have some more guests going forward, and I'm lining some more up as we speak from around the world and also within the UK, some very, very established professionals down to some newbies. I think we need to have the mix because we've got such a wide and varied audience, and hopefully all of you ladies and gents will receive the next guest and the guests after that with equal plumb. So we hope that you enjoy what we're doing and continue to subscribe to all the various platforms that we're on. Okay, Pete, where do you want to start with this? Do we go to markets, or where do you want to start somewhere else today?
I think the only thing to throw in quickly is about the markets, that as we speak, and this is about, I don't know, 6:15 p.m. on Wednesday the 11th of August, the FTSE 100 has just pretty much broken out to a new sort of recent high, so I guess a new three-month high or whatever. And, I hate to say it, but it looks quite good where we are today. And obviously the American markets have been making continual new highs, and they're right up by their new highs. I'm still very wary myself about the autumn. I really think, tail end of August, September, October could be quite rocky. And I've been moving the cash in a big way. I've actually got 6% cash, which is biggest cash position I've had for ages. It's just not normally like me to have that much cash. So, yeah, I just a little bit nervous. It's a little bit too easy, you know?
Well, we're sitting at low volume. We've had numerous takeovers. We've had the US infrastructure bill being cleared. So markets are getting a little bit of a joy from that. The FTSE closed today at 7,220, which is just over, it's a new 52-week high. We're not back to where we were back in, February the 1st is our next sort of resistance level. of 7466. That's an almighty sort of figure to get past, given where we ended up in March of 2020. But we're at 52 week high, in a sense of from, and that goes, obviously we're talking about from August to August, but we go further back to where we were in February. Our resistance level is 7466. When we recorded the last podcast on the 28th of July, the FTSE was sitting at 7016. So we've done a good 204 points since then. So that's almost like 3%. So that's a
nice bounce,
a good move in 2 weeks for the FTSE. So quite pleased with that. My go-to space in the FTSE All Share is the FTSE 250. And when we recorded on the 28th, that was 23,086. And that's now sitting and closed today at 23,756. So that's up nearly 700 points. So that's done quite well. And always said about keeping an eye on the FTSE All Share figure of 4,000. On the 28th of the 7th, we were sitting at 4,042, if my figures are correct. And today we closed at 4,143, so that's sitting near highs again.
Yeah.
AIM has done well. It's sitting at 1,268 versus 1,244, sorry, on the 28th. So that's up as well. But as you said, Pete, all the US markets are sitting near and or at new all-times high intraday today. And the Dow, when I last looked, was at 35,461, a new high. S&P 500 was sitting at 4444, new high. NASDAQ was sitting at 14,751, again, another new high. Dow's up 15.86% year to date. S&P 500 is up 18.3%, and the Nasdaq's up 14.5%. So you know, that infrastructure bill is giving people a little bit of joy. And as we spoke in the last podcast, a lot of the tech stocks have helped push the markets higher as well. So interesting times to be on the sidelines with lots of cash. Everything's getting more and more expensive, but I suspect there'll be opportunities for people to buy into the markets if they want to. But equally, you know, if you are fully invested right now, just brace yourself, because we don't know what's around the corner.
Well, that's it. I mean, it's interesting because, like I said, it's unusual for me to have so much cash. And some of it is a consequence of, like, takeovers and stuff. In fact, you know, I've had two takeovers that have completed recently, and that's got me quite a bit of cash. But I just don't feel like I want to commit that cash. There's one thing I've got my eye on, but I'm not going to buy a lot of it. And I might do that in coming days. I'm sort of stalking the chart and looking for an entry. But apart from that, you know, I'm really not really doing very much, and just really sort of thinking, well, am I going to need to hedge? You know, is there going to be some kind of pullback? But the funny thing is, I actually am seeing a lot of stocks that actually look quite attractive still in terms of valuations and stuff. And we're going to talk about a few on the podcast later. And, you know, I'm not struggling to find interesting stocks, but I am seeing a lot of stocks where I just think, my God, that's high. You know what I mean? The PE ratios on so many things are in the 30s, 40s, 50s. And, you know, it's just so much of it is just excessive. And I just think that's all going to come to bite at some point soon. You know, it just feels that way to me.
I agree with you, Pete. I mean, as you know, I tend to try and look less at the PE ratios and more at what I think the sum of parts are for the company or the intrinsic value. And it's great to see after the Morrisons ongoing battle that more and more people are doing tweets about what they think or what they've assessed or what they've analysed the sum of parts to be for a certain company. And for me, the beauty of trying to do that additional bit of research, and it does take a bit of time, and it is hard to do, and I'm still trying to get mastering it after 20 odd years. I'm still having difficulty to do it, and it takes a long time to get it right. and I still get it wrong, as been proven with some of the stocks that have been taken over, is that it gives you that margin of safety, Pete. You know, you're talking about high PE level. I'm talking about intrinsic value in sum of parts. If you're buying a very, very rich PE stock or a very, very fully valued stock, you've got no margin of safety.
Absolutely.
And if the RNS or the half year or the trading update or the full year figures come out, and there's no wiggle room, and it comes out and it says, you know what, this stock has not delivered, you're looking at 5, 10, 15, 20% drop within the first hour. You know, so I always say to people, just be mindful you're not getting trapped in a bull squeeze or a stock being forced higher on immaterial noise, you know, and it's not something grounded in fundamentals, because richly valued stocks or stuff that's being pushed has no wiggle room. If it goes wrong, you're going to get hammered. And the markets now are sitting at 52-week highs for the FTSE, multi-year highs for other markets. If people start to say this stock, that stock, whatever, is really, really good to get in at this point when it's near a 52-week or a multi-year high, if something goes wrong with the markets or that individual company, you will pay dearly. So just tread carefully with the next sort of stocks you buy at this particular time in the market. We could be far higher in 2 or 3 months' time. I don't know. But just be mindful of what you're buying and why you're buying and what's the company and how much research have you actually done. Do not go and just buy a stock because someone else has just bought it. I saw that today on the market and I'm going, oh my gosh, why are these people buying this stock? But they were buying it, you know?
That's exactly it. I mean, one of the things I always think when I'm buying a stock is, if I'm buying a stock on a, let's say, on a forward PE of 28, 29, yeah, I've got to think to myself, who's going to buy it off me? You know, if it's on a forward PE of 28, 29, I'm hoping for the earnings to keep growing, and I'm hoping to get some extra re-rating as well. So if it's on a forward PE of 28, 29, I'm probably sort of hoping that's going to push up to 35, 40. So I'm getting a bit of re-rate on top of the earnings growth. The problem is, when you're buying at those kind of levels, like who the hell's going to buy it off you? You know, for me personally, I'd far rather buy something on a PE of 13, where I actually think there's much more margin of safety, where I can, you know, where I think the earnings growth is going to get me quite a bit anyway. And the thing could re-rate from 13 to 22. That makes me a massive gain just on the re-rate. And to me, that just makes so much more sense than buying things that have already run a long way. Whenever you're buying a stock on a really high PE, you've really got to be hoping or expecting that it's going to beat the earnings. It's going to continually put out updates ahead of forecasts, ahead of expectations. If it's doing that, you're laughing. But you run a real risk when you're buying a stock on a forward PE of 40, hoping it's going to keep beating expectations, because at some point it won't.
That's exactly it. I mean, you said who's going to buy it at that particular rating, and you've heard it, Pete, so I'm just going to explain it for those that haven't heard this before. It's called the greater fool theory. The greater fool theory argues that prices go up because people are able to sell overpriced securities to a greater fool, whether or not they're overvalued. That is, of course, until there's no greater fool left. And the greater fool that's normally left is usually me, you, or somebody else, because we've gone in there unprepared and we're left there on the spike. We're left there just before or just after they've announced another placing. Just before the company's announced that actually it's going to delist. You know what I mean?
So yeah, yeah.
If you're not careful, you're going to be the one, or I'm going to be the one. And that's why I take so much precaution. Eventually, all markets run out of fools. Yeah. Whether or not they just implode their spread bet account, trading account, or their investing account. And that's why you just got to take a little bit of due diligence. That's why I keep banging on about psychology of the markets, banging on about researching your own stock, banging on about not following me, not following Pete, not following anybody. But unfortunately, every single day I see people just going hell for leather on a stock because someone's mentioned that they bought it. And unfortunately, sometimes they're going to pay the piper.
Well, that's it. I mean, if you are just going to follow other people, you can't be surprised when it goes wrong on you. That's the sad reality of the situation.
Cool. Pete, you wanted to talk about something to do with number of stocks. I'm not sure why.
It's an interesting one because I meet with a lot of private investors and other investors, whatever, and have various discussions about their portfolios and their performance and whatever. And the thing that stands out to me time and time again is that the people who make the really big gains tend to have much more concentrated portfolios. So for instance, right, I've at the moment, probably, let's say in my main ISA sort of thing, I've got about 37, 38 stocks at the moment, yeah? And I'm pretty sure that if I reduce that 38 stocks down to, say, 18, I bet I would achieve a much higher yearly gain. But of course, the price I would pay for that is that I'd be taking on more risk. I wouldn't be diversifying as much, So I think the number of stocks is a really major factor. And I've got a great example of that I'll mention in a minute. But I think the other factor that really makes a difference, and it's obvious why this is that small caps are where it's at. So people who have concentrated portfolios, let's say 18 stocks, 15 stocks, that kind of number, and they also invest in quality, let me stress that word, quality, small caps, as opposed to your AIM garbage, which is losing money, is a waste of time, yeah? If you're buying quality small caps and you've got a concentrated portfolio, it's almost, you know, you are going to get much better returns than if you hold 40 stocks and you've got it across the spectrum or whatever, which is what I do. And I mean, I think the returns I make for the number of stocks in the portfolio, risk adjusted return, if you like, are not bad. But I'm pretty sure I could make higher returns by going more just to small caps, quality small caps, and go in for sort of like 15, 18 holdings. But of course, the complication is that it has scale limits because as you scale up, it gets harder and harder to buy enough stock of a small company. Yeah, when you've got, I don't know, when your portfolio is worth a couple of million or something, you know, it's going to be really difficult to buy some of this stuff. And it's certainly going to be difficult to sell it when you want to. So that becomes an issue. And obviously the buying of it and the selling of it. And so it's just, you know, it's like everything, there's trade-offs. And I think for me personally, where I am now, I'm happy pretty much with the number of stocks I've got, although I do think I might drop it to 30. I keep thinking about this. But I'm sort of comfortable that, you know, on the amount of value in my portfolio, I can buy stocks when I want. I can sell stocks when I can do it online. I don't want to be making phone calls and faffing about with my speaking to my brokers. I just want to do it when I want to do it, you know, around my lifestyle, around the constraints of my life. And that suits me, you know. And yeah, what's your thoughts on that, mate?
I probably hold a similar amount of stocks as you, Pete.
Yeah.
I think for me, the important factor amongst diversification is what the values is of the portfolio. And for me, regarding stocks and funds, how much duplication there is and how much you've got in any one particular company. Obviously, I can't speak of my portfolio without saying it's completely skewed. But for most people, it's about having some people like to have an equal weighting of each stock in their portfolio. Some people have got a number one, a two, three, four that's oversized in their portfolio. But for me, first of all, look at what the overall value is of your whole portfolio, including your trading pot, if you have a trading pot, and then consider, why am I holding this particular stock in my portfolio that makes up 0.5, 0.75 or 1% of my portfolio when I've got one stock in my portfolio that makes up 15% or 20%? What was the purpose of that, of buying that stock? Was I thinking about adding to it, or was it, is it something that I just can't get round to selling, and I'm loath to sell because I've made a loss on it, because it's now sitting from a 4% position to a 1% position, you know? I think the hardest part, Pete, regarding diversification is actually finding, as you've said rightly, the number of quality stocks that you can hold long term. So you're not churning, you're not buying, selling, buying, selling every other week and chasing momentum stocks or chasing the newest and the latest idea or the latest fad. The best investors that I know out there are long term investors. They've bought stocks for 3 years, 4 years, 5 years and more. And they don't really quibble when the stock's sitting there 5% down or 10% down, because they know what they have and they know that long term that stock or fund's going to do okay.
Yeah.
So I'm loath to say there's an optimal figure regarding portfolios, but there's a historical piece of research by two guys called Edwin J. Elton and Martin J. Kruber. And they did a piece entitled Risk Reduction and Portfolio Size back in 1977. And I think if people are going to be honest, if they look at the risk factor, they would hold between 20 and 50 shares and lower their total risk. If someone's sitting around with 8 stocks or 10 stocks and that value of that portfolio is significantly higher than, say, 50K, then they're waiting for one of those stocks to really impact them. And if they've got a large weighting in any one stock and they've only got 8 or 10, then they better get those 8 right, because one of those stocks, are good, if it implodes, will really take the whole portfolio down. So if I was to put my spin on things, I would say, because I know you've got quite a sizable portfolio, Pete, I would say having it at 40 or thereabouts, high 30s, is probably ideal. But you might want to look at, is there any duplication in your portfolio? Have I got 2 stocks that are sitting there that are more or less doing exactly the same thing? Have I got 2 funds that sit in my portfolio or less do the same thing, and get rid of one of them? You know what I mean?
Let's do the duplication thing with a real example, right? This is real life. And I did mention it before the call that I was going to bring it up, but I'm just going to sort of throw it to you. Now, the reason I'm saying this is that I just wanted to throw the idea around with you. And that's basically, I hold Standard Chartered Bank. Yeah, Stan, STAN. And I also hold HSBC, where the code is HSBA, very confusingly. So I've got those two banks, right? And obviously, they're sort of like exposed to international stuff. They're both pivoting towards Asia. And I just can't help thinking that to a large extent, they're driven by the same drivers, really. I think the big difference is that Stan is probably slightly more racy, and I think HSBA is more of an income stock. And I've got it in my income portfolio, but I'm sort of thinking, why do I have Stan as well? Maybe I should dump Stan and just stick with HSBA in the income portfolio. I think I might have some more somewhere else. I'm not sure. Anyway, what's your sort of take on that, mate? Any particular thoughts about that?
I would say that you're right in assessing them both as both sort of, being in the same sort of demographic and where they are in the world and what they're doing. I tend to try and look at what they've achieved, Pete, over the long term. So if I'm drawing up some stats now, I'd throw these at you and I'd look at the total returns over 10 years.
Yeah.
Right. And Stan, including dividends, is minus 6.1% over 10 years annualized. So you're paying to keep that stock. Okay. Over 5 years, it's minus 5.5%. Okay.
Yeah.
Over 3 years annualized, it's minus 10.6%. And over the past year, it's up 15. But you've got to remember that that past year includes the stocks getting smashed all the way down to the March lows. So that's a bit of an anomaly.
Yeah.
Go to HSBC and do the same again. Which one's performed better? And this is what we'll get when this computer decides to move on. what we've got here over 10 years, annualized HSBA ticker 3.16. So that's already up. Okay.
So that's five. Positive 3.16.
Positive 3.6.
Whereas Stan was down minus 6%.
Yeah. Yeah, five-year annualized 0.3%. Again, better than Stan. Three-year annualized almost the same, if not worse, 12.95. I think during the last 3 years, had a bit of litigation stuff, hasn't it? So over the past 1 year, it's up 27%. So again, beating Stan. So if I had to choose one, Pete, and which is more globally recognized, I'd choose HSBC. Think also they've probably got more sort of wherewithal and financial acumen to actually get more stuff done and to rationalize the business and actually make some better purchases. So I'd probably go with HSBC and the Stan. But then again, Stan being the smaller entity, probably, you know, has an outside chance of even being taken over or split up or whatever.
Yeah.
So there's always that, and we're talking about, you know, on a weekly basis now there's two or three stocks being taken over, Pete, or decided to spin something off. So, you know, could Stan be, you know, finally consumed by somebody else? Who knows?
It's an interesting one. Thanks for those stats, because they're really quite sort of insightful, really.
This is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
It's like I said, the main reason I've got HSBA is as an income stock. Let me just have a quick look at the good old SharePad on my... I've put SharePad, I say I've put it, you know, you just have to use a window kind of thing on the old internet jobby. I put it on my little tablet and it's just so much sort of like more convenient for me to grab and just have a quick look at, you know what I mean? So for things like, you know, getting forward PEs and forward dividends and all that kind of stuff, which is just the very simple basics I want to start with. It's just brilliant for getting that. Hang on. So HSBA, play it into the machine. The only problem is my tablet's not the fastest tablet on earth. Right. Okay, that's interesting. So it's got forecast yield is 4.1%. That's at 412p. And the two-year forecast yield is 5%. So actually, they are expecting it to still put out a fairly nice yield on the face of it. Yeah, obviously, we need to do more checks than that. But that's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, if you look back at the beginning of August, Pete, they came out with reasonable profits and the bad debt levels improved. And the statement was, we now expect to move to within our target dividend payout ratio of 40 to 55% of reported earnings per ordinary share in 2021. So that's another positive, you know, lower bad debts, because people have been sitting at home with lots of cash and paying down their debt. And that enables them to pay an improved dividend. We talked about the banks before. And, you know, that dividend is going to start attracting, or better dividend is going to start attracting more and more investors. So if Stan joins, you know, NatWest and Barclays and the others, you know, he might well be another candidate for further purchases from other people and also institutions going forward.
I've just very quickly whizzed up Stan on SharePad on my tablet, and that's showing a forecast yield of 2.7% and a two-year forecast yield of 3.5%, and that's based on £4.66. I mean, it appears, you know, not too bad value. Maybe the growth's going to be quicker. I am leaning towards, I mean, I never make a fast decision, you know me. I might be having the same conversation with you in 3 weeks. But I am leaning towards maybe dumping Stan and just keeping HSBA. Yeah. Anyway, no, thanks. That's useful, mate.
No, that's cool. I mean, Pete, as far as I'm concerned, mate, over the long term, despite its litigation issues and a couple of, you know, other bits going backwards, regarding it. HSBC has always been the better and the stronger brand and company. And given my sort of views on where I'm heading regarding my stocks, I'm going further up the food chain and higher quality. And of the two, HSBA ticker symbol is of better quality.
Stands out.
And therefore, if things go wrong, HSBA has probably got more standing power. Yeah. You know what I mean? Than the Standard Charter.
No, that makes sense. Let me just raise that example. Right, I've got a really good mate, who only holds six quality stocks at any one time. And I cannot stress the word quality enough, right? With this guy, he literally just, you'll know who he is. Hello, mate. You're right. He literally is fastidious on every single detail. So he will not buy and he will not hold on to a stock that he's got even the slightest doubt about. So everything's got to be good. You know, the growth's got to be there. The confidence has got to be there. The balance sheet, everything's got to be right about this company. And he buys, you know, like I said, so he has a portfolio of six stocks. He's actually had to go up to eight. So he now holds eight because he's done so incredibly well. And let me tell you what he's done, And listeners can do their own maths to figure it out. But basically, he's in 6 years, right? Just 6 years. He has doubled his money once. So that's his portfolio. He's doubled it once. He's doubled it again. And he's doubled it again. Now you think that out, right? So you think, let's just give an example. Let's say he had 10,000 quid 6 years ago, 10,000 quid, you double it once, you get 20,000 quid. You double it again, you get 40,000 quid. You double it again, you get 80,000 quid. So we've taken 10 grand to 80 grand in 6 years. I think that's incredible. I think it's extremely impressive. I think it's also quite risky. And I don't think it's for everybody. And I don't think anyone should listen to this and go, you know, Wheelie says buy six stocks. No, I do not say that. It's horses for courses. You've got to do what works for you. But it's a great example of how a concentrated portfolio of quality small caps can deliver stunning returns.
It can be. And I will congratulate that person who's done that. The question I would ask when you say quality small cap stocks, I would ask, you know, what sort of stocks is he buying? Is he buying the stocks that are in certain sectors? Is he buying stocks that are recovery stocks? Is he buying stocks which are completely off the radar? Or is he buying stuff that's, you know, got really, really strong management and are of a very, very high quality? Because it's really hard to find those stocks. And like, as you say, he's now done so well, he needs to move to eight. At some point, he'll have to move to 10. And the problem I have with some of this is that we've been in essentially a bull market since 2009, and not to take anything away from your mate and what he's achieved, but it's about how will he do or how has he done when the period of the market's been really, really poor. You know, so what was happening to his portfolio back in March, April of last year? How did he do in it, and what sort of things did he do to ensure that those six stocks were the right six stocks for the market? Did he hold all the way through, you know, or did he just sell up just before or during and then start again, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting. I can't remember the details we do, but one thing I will add, right, is that not only is he absolutely fastidious about the quality. So when you said about quality management, oh yeah, he wants quality management and he'll talk to management and whatever, you know. But the other thing that's interesting is that he will not tolerate underperformance with stocks. So basically, if he has a stock and it just keeps falling and falling and he's just not comfortable with it, he's out. There is no question. There is, you know, he's not a strict stop loss person as such, But as soon as he starts feeling I'm not happy with this, he's out. And he's told me about one where he basically took a 40% loss. And on the kind of money we're talking about, this is a significant amount of money. And when he told me, I was absolutely like, bloody hell, that is just horrible. Yeah, for me personally, that's horrific. But he is happy to take that kind of loss and move on. So it basically means he's got six stocks in his portfolio, or now it's going to be eight, that are all blinking good stocks. They're small stocks, they're quality stocks. But like I said, he doesn't buy anything loss making. He might buy something that's going to make a profit next year. Do you know what I mean? It's that near, you know. And there are a lot of companies that do, you know, satisfy that criteria. But you've got to hunt them out. You'll go for recovery stocks, you'll go for growth stocks, you'll go for whatever. But it's basically that the quality does have to stack up, and that he just does not accept any silliness. You know, one thing he obviously likes is things like having net cash, strong balance sheet. He likes, you know, and I think that, and I do. I think that's really important and helpful. It's just a great example of how, you know, strong gains can be achieved. You know, I've got other mates who've got sort of say 14, 15 stocks this year, whereas my portfolio is probably up, say, 20% as we speak, their portfolios are going to be up 40, 45, you know, which is absolutely incredible. But again, they do it with quality. There's no messing, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I think I need to caveat what I said as well, Pete. I think we've all got to be disciplined in our assessment of what our friends and peers are doing. And I've said this a few times on the podcast before, and I've said it on Twitter as well. I don't think you should spend too much time and energy looking at what other people's portfolios and inter-week or inter-month performances are. I think what you should do, if you're going to look at any sort of comparison, is to how well an individual has done over 5 years or 10 years. Because anyone can do well for 2 or 3 or 4 years. I suspect the person that you're talking about has done well for a long, long, long time, because it sounds like they're a very, very disciplined individual.
He's no fool.
Absolutely. So kudos to him. But unfortunately, Pete. But unfortunately, I think there are a lot of people on Twitter day in, day out, comparing other people's performances. So what that does is encourages them to take more risks, Pete. And what we all need to do is actually take back and reduce our risk and be happy to do a bit of research, buy a stock, hold it for a little while, and allow the stock to actually get to where it needs to go to. It's about having a little bit of patience, Pete, you know. And the important thing about having a bit of patience is every single bit of research you can find shows that if you hold a stock for 5 years plus, you're more or less 90%, 80% guaranteed, if you've chosen a good stock, to be in profit. If you hold a stock for 24 hours or 24 days, you're 50%, 60% chances of getting it completely wrong and losing money on it. So I would just say, you know, please, if you're listening, ladies and gents, don't compare your performance to somebody else and change your strategy because someone else's strategy is working.
Well, let me just say that, my mate is actually a very normal, humble guy from a very, you know, working class background. He's you know, good geezer. The other thing I was going to say very quickly is that if you're going to look at what returns other people claim to do, you've got to get under the skin. I mean, if it's people on Twitter saying, I've done this, yeah, whatever. But if you're like, you know, like me, you're down the pub with people and they're saying to you, I've done this, you've got to then drill into it and try to understand how they've achieved that return. Have they achieved that return with a sensible, appropriate level of risk? Or have they actually achieved that by luck? Because I suspect there's a lot of that going on as well. So it's no good just to see the performance in isolation. You've got to understand what has driven it. And as I said, the thing that I tend to find that I notice time and time again, my friends, my acquaintances, the people I know who are making good returns, they're nearly always concentrated portfolio small caps. That's the dominant factor.
And you're right, Pete. I think if we've looked over the recent times, you know, bar the FTSE 250, small caps have been the place to be. You know, the FTSE 100 has been the laggard of almost every, you know, overseas indices. So, you know, caps and FTSE 250 have been the place to be. So I wouldn't question that. And I would say, absolutely, if you can do your digging and do your research and get some real good quality stocks down there, you know, you're looking for future FTSE 250 stocks. That's what you're looking for. Can they get into the FTSE 250? Can they get into the FTSE 100 from where they are? You know, from 5 years from now, could they do that with really serious, you know, top of the market growth? That's what you're looking for, really.
And obviously, FTSE 250s could become FTSE 100. Mate, is there some stuff you wanted to talk about regarding the charity and whatever?
Yeah, I've got some news regarding the charity. First and foremost, I want to thank everybody that's supported the charity so far. And the news that I've got is of significance to those that have already made a donation and those that may make a donation between now and the 17th of September. Let me change that date to the 17th of August. And what I've decided to do, folks, is I'm going to put on an event with my good friend Elric at Lemming Investor.
Cool.
We're going to put a event on in Leicester at the Memphis Hub on the 17th of September. So what I'm going to say is that anyone that's made a donation so far, I'm going to say to those people, if you can verify that you've made a donation and you can contact me via Twitter, I'm going to open it up to the first 20 people that contact me. And you'll be invited to this event because it's going to be invitation only. The first 20 people that contact me will be invited and they can come to Leicester. I'll sort all the details out in the next couple of weeks. It's going to be an event with two listed companies, some guest speakers talking about investing and business resilience and so on and so on and so forth. And we're going to have some raffle prizes, some other gifts. And all of the money, including the listed companies that are going to be attending, all of that money is going to go directly to Memphis. I'm not taking a penny out of it. So the reason why I'm doing this is because my ultimate goal is to raise £10,000 plus. I'm really, really chuffed because it was only yesterday we smashed through the £5,000 barrier. And that was because of a chap called Rashad, who's at Swiss Rash. And he's actually the chap that you, Pete, called. When you were calling me posh, he jumped on Twitter and said, there's nothing posh about where Pete's from, as in Conkers is from. And actually, at the weekend, because I went to see my dad because it was his birthday, I actually organised to meet with him and we met up in Oldham and was talking about old times in Oldham. It's just absolutely bizarre. So he's based in Switzerland.
Wow.
He's called Rashad. And Rashad actually made a donation yesterday, I think it was, of £50. And that took us over the hurdle of £5,000. So Rashad, thank you ever so much, mate, for that. We had donations from Mark Fell at Omfell. Gave us £10.
Excellent.
Jeremy gave us a quote and said, great podcast, chaps, and dropped £10 in the kitty.
Andrea
34, she said, thanks for the podcast, Pete and Peter. Great listening on the Friday or the weekend afternoon when I need a rest. Would give more if not anxious about likely redundancy this year. Best wishes, Andrea X, £10 and £2.50 gift aid.
Brilliant.
At Child of the 70s, thanks again for the great podcast. They don't just happen and take time and effort to put together. Happy to make a small donation to a very worthy cause. All the very best, chaps. Neil, £10 and 50 pence gift aid.
Cheers, Neil. Nice one.
JW, good job, Twin Peaks. £10 and £2.50 gift aid. Terry, Keep up the good work, and thanks for mentioning Akrol. Small cap expert Gervais Williams owns Akrol in his fund. A good sign, and God bless. Take care. Keep safe. I'm sure that's your mate Terry, and that's
Terry from
yeah,
brilliant.
And Terry at Nicholas blah 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 Vaughan is the person I'm meant to be matching every single one of his donations between now and December. So I will keep that promise to Terry and match his things. We've got Northy, guys, great work. Avid listener to the podcast. Perfect for a long walk. And I hope this little donation gets you closer to the impressive 5K target.
Excellent.
£50 and £12 gift aid. Thank you, Northy.
Thanks, Norby. Thanks, TW. Was it TW or JW? I think it's JW.
JW as well. Yeah. Terry Q, first time donating, but long term listener. Good job, lads. £50 and £12 gift aid.
Excellent. Thanks,
Terry. Thank you. We've got your good friend and our good friend, Pete Jaws. Keep up the good work, both of you. £100 plus £25 gift aid.
Thanks, Jaws. Nice one, mate.
We've got a chap, I think, he's been listening to us for some time, I think. Witam Rockclaw. He's on Twitter. I know he is. He's a good job. £30 donation. Someone's made a donation, not said how much it is.
Thanks, Witam.
Wants to remain anonymous. Then we've got Moses. Thank you, Moses. First time listening to your podcast and heard about the Just Giving page. Put it on your Twitter profile. Wonderful cause to raise for this. This will get you one step closer to the 5K. Thank you, Moses. Moses donated £123.37 gift
fantastic.
Aid. And that's the first time he's ever listened. So that's very, very impressive, Moses.
Awesome.
Thank you ever so much.
Wow.
And we've got good old at Sandy Mid. Regular Twin Peaks podcast listener, £25 and £6 and £25 gift aid. Thank you, Sandy.
Thanks, Sandy. We know Sandy. I hope you're well, mate.
Yeah, Scrumpy seems to be making a deposit to us and a donation every week. So
he's a legend.
Scrumpy triple two, you are a legend, mate. Thank you. £10 plus £2.50 gift aid. Thank you, mate. Kips made a donation. I don't know how much. He just says, guys, keep up the good work. And then we've got Rash, who I've already mentioned. Thanks again, Rash. And then we've got your mate, I think, here, Pete. Jason at Jake the Peg 1971.
Oh, that's Jace. Yeah, nice. Well, thanks,
is that your car guy?
Yeah. I'll see him soon. Yeah, brilliant.
See him soon. Nice. He's glad to be at the bash, mate. Thank you, Jace. He donated £20 and £5 gift aid. So just to refresh, guys and ladies, I'll be holding a Twins Peak Challenge fundraising event in Leicester on the 17th of September. It's invitation only. I'm opening up at present to 20 of you, ladies and gents, that have already made a donation and make a donation before the 17th of August. All I need is for you to contact me on Twitter or DM. And if you can't get through my DM, just send me a message on Open Twitter and say you want to attend. I'll add you to the list. I'll ask you to verify who you are and what donation you've made. And then you will be my guest and Lemington's guest at the event, and we'll see how we go on from there. The event's going to be open to about 80 to 100 investors and business people and our guests only, and there will be nobody allowed in who has not been invited or hasn't got an invitation. So I'm opening up to those people that helped us get over the 5,000 mark. I want to thank everybody so far that's given an invitation. I know that it's in Leicester. I know that some of you will be thinking, oh, I'd like to go, but I can't travel. Our plan is to do two further events. At the moment, myself and Lemington investor, Lemming investor, I always say it wrong. Lemming investor are planning
Lemington,
to do one in Manchester and also probably in and around Portsmouth/Gosport area. So that's to help us get towards the 15K mark so we can help all those disabled children. If you haven't made a donation yet, and you're thinking of making a donation, please join the Twin Peaks Challenge family and make a donation in the next few days or going forward. We really, really need your help to get to the ultimate goal of 15K. The next figure we're pushing for is 7.5, but ultimately we're trying to get this to £15,000. And that's why I'm doing all this work in the background to do these three events up and down the country to raise it for a really, really good cause. Thank you, guys.
Cool. I noticed there was a guy called Kips there or a girl called Kips there or whatever. So thank you for that. Anyway,
yeah.
I just want to throw in an extremely fast lateral thinking one. I owe the listeners on the last one where it was basically a guy gets up, turns the light on, looks out the window, shoots himself. That was the lighthouse keeper. He basically saw the ship had hit the rocks. Another really fast one that I'll just throw in quick. That is basically a guy goes into a restaurant, orders albatross, takes a bite, goes outside, shoots himself. Explain that one. There's a lot of murder and nasty stuff going on with these things. So anyway, right, mate, we need to do some stocks.
Right, I'll start with one, Pete.
Yeah.
I don't hold it, but it's a very interesting stock. And I don't really see a lot of people talking about this particular stock. And that's why it's drawn to my attention. And it came out with some really, really phenomenal numbers. And it goes back to some people having too much money on their hands, sitting in their pockets and, you know, going out buying cars and going out buying expensive gifts. The company is called Watches of Switzerland, and the ticker symbol is WOSG. And yep. It came out with total revenues rocketed, Pete, of 102%. Yeah, with strong performance in both the US and the UK. Look, it's a luxury watches retailer. Yeah, so revenue rocketed 102% to 297 million. In 13 weeks ending the 1st of August. That's the first quarter, Pete, 102% up.
It's incredible. Yeah. It's impressive. It really is.
It's a FTSE 250 stock, and it's done phenomenally well for those that have been patient to buy it and hold on regarding that particular stock. So that's one I think it's done well so far already, but it's definitely one to keep an eye on. If people are buying watches or treating their partners, or just, you know, spending their money not just on watches, not just on cars, then that's probably a stock to just keep an eye on. There might be more in the tank there.
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer via SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code TWINPEAKS. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free, and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe to SharePad today using the TWINPEAKS promo code, and you can save up to £69. Visit sharescope.co.uk/sharepad for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
Right, I was looking on ShearPad. It's got a forecast PE of 32.2 and a two-year forecast PE of 27.2. I think that looks very attractive when you consider those growth rates. I mean, the way to look at it is that if you've got a forward PE of 20, you need to have 20% growth. Well, we just said there, two-year forward PE 27. This thing's growing at, like, what did you say, 102%? I mean, you know,
for the quarter, obviously it's going to slow. That was for the quarter, Pete. I don't know what's going to happen next. The caveat being, Pete, it's gone in the last 52 weeks from £2.60 to £10.85. It's sitting at the moment at down 2% today at £10.24. Year to date, it's up 77%, and in the last 1 year, it's up 278%. It's not one to chase, but it's definitely something to keep an eye on.
Well, I think it's one of those. For me personally, I mean, I really like WOSG. I don't hold it, but I'm definitely interested in it. I misunderstood it and got it wrong, and it was after a chat with a guy called Ian Palmer. Hi, Ian, down the pub, and I sort of reappraised it when I had this chat with Ian. And the thing that really appeals to me is that they're trying to move into US in a big way, and there's a lot of potential in the US.
Agreed. I think the interesting thing as well, Pete, is that ordinarily, you know, and I like my watches, and I spoke to other people before, and I've got a couple, and I, that I don't actually wear. I just bought as an investment. It's interesting that they're able to sell some of these watches and a lot of their watches via e-commerce. So you're actually just going online, and they've got great graphics online, and they're showing you the watch and the mechanism of the watch. So they're selling these watches without people physically seeing them, Pete.
Not
trying them on, not putting, you know, you always used to put it on your wrist and have a little flick about and all the rest of it. So the e-commerce sales were up 16%. That's pretty good.
Well, the other thing to bear in mind is that actually they're also, they've got a model where, you know, we talked before, like with pets at home, pets, we talked about the destination store. These, the WOSG shops are destination stores. So people will go there to actually try on a watch and make an event of it. If you're buying a Rolex or whatever, it's not something you just flippantly buy. You want to go there. You want to get service. You want to be looked after. You want to waste the salesman's time. That's your prerogative. That's what you do. But that's what people do. It's a real event to spend, I don't know, $6,000 on a watch or whatever they cost. So, you know, so I think, yeah, you're right. I mean, the online thing has been fantastic for them, but I think it's more than just that. It is a real omni-channel retailer. I really like it. The way I would play it myself, I mean, it's a stock I really like, and I could very easily see myself buying that. What I would probably do is buy it small now, or, you know, or fairly soon, with a view to add into it over time. So if we get a pullback, whatever, I'd be buying more, whatever. That's the way I would play it.
Cool. All right, mate, go ahead with what you've got. What
right. stock you've got? Okay, another one that's very interesting. It's one that never gets mentioned by anyone, right? S&U, right? So it's, the company's called S&U,
mm-hmm.
and the ticker code is SUS, and it's basically a sort of... It sort of sounds like a subprime lender, and it sort of is, but it's an unusual one because what it does is it lends on secondhand cars, yeah? So it's got a thing called Advantage Finance that lends on secondhand cars, and they're very good at assessing the customer. So they take on more risk than like the high street banks would, yeah? But they're very good at assessing the customers, and they have very, very low default rates. And, you know, they're doing really well. And the other interesting thing is it's a family-run business. So you know, it's well-established, been around quite a while. The other thing they've started doing in recent years is they do bridging loans for houses and property stuff, yeah? And that's like a new side to the business. And that's been going really well. They had an update the other day. Let me just give you the share pad numbers. Right, so forecast PE on it is 18.1, and it drops the two-year forecast PE. They're forecasting 13.2. So obviously there's quite a drop there, so that means the earnings are going up a lot between 1 year out and 2 year out. So you need to understand, is that sensible for those earnings to grow that much? In terms of the dividend, it's got forecast yield 3.4%. And that's rising to 3.8% 2 years out. And that's at £29.10 a share. So I don't know. I think that's an interesting little stock there. And I think that's one well worth looking at.
Yeah, I mean, you're referring to the trading update today, Pete. It's basically trading was currently ahead of expectation, which everyone likes to read in the opening sort of gambit. In terms of profitability, collections, and book debt quality, so that's good. You know what I mean? Updating investors, the financial specialist said its Advantage Motor operations continue to enjoy a profitable, controlled, cash generative recovery. So that's what you want to hear, mate. So yeah, I think you've called a good one there. I'm just pulling up what it's done so far year to date. Let's just have a look here. It's another one that's for a sleepy little lender, mate. It's doing better than your Stan shares, that's for certain.
Tell me about it.
So if you want to get rid of Stan, buy some more of that, mate, if you haven't bought it.
No, I don't hold it. In fact,
you don't hold it. So it's up 27% year to date, Pete, and it's up 80% in the over the course of 12 months. Does it pay a dividend, Pete?
Yeah, I was saying it's in 2 years' time forecast, 3.8%.
Oh, I missed that. Sorry. Yeah.
That's not
Okay.
bad, is it? You know,
That's not bad. That's not
yeah.
bad, mate. That's not
And like
bad.
I say, it's a family-run business, and that's often a good thing because, you know, they've got they'll have, you know, cousins and aunties and grannies and,
Yeah.
you know, who are all dependent.
It's
They're
all
all
about
dependent on
stewardship, Pete.
business, and it, yeah,
Yeah. All
changing
about
the asset.
stewardship. They're looking to maintain the business for the long term to hand it over to somebody else.
Exactly that.
Yeah. So yeah, good call.
Right, another interesting one, right? I've got a feeling we might have mentioned this on a podcast years ago. I don't know. SYNT, which is Synthoma. Yeah.
Yes, we have mentioned that in the past, mate. Go ahead.
Yeah. Now that's one that does rubber, like is it latex? So it's like rubber. Basically, I just think rubber gloves. Yeah, I just think they do rubber gloves. It's the easiest way.
I'm just hoping you're going to keep this PG, Pete. Please carry on.
Oh man, honestly, where you can stick, you know, hands in rubber
Yes.
gloves.
Oh,
Right.
please, please, Pete.
Anyway, BA. Right. It's you're starting me off today. You don't want to do
I'm
that.
trying to stop you, mate. Come on.
You don't want to do that, mate. Right. Here we go. So SYNT forecast PE, right? 1 year out, 7.5. 2 year forecast PE, 11. It's got a forecast yield of 5.3%, and it's got a forecast 2 year yield of 3.3. So that's a bit strange. Why would the yield drop from the 1 year to next? So obviously people need to look at understand why that's happening. But I just think the market is assuming that, you know, sales of rubber gloves and that are going to fall away as COVID recedes. I get a funny feeling the market could be very, very wrong on this one, and that could be a very cheap stock. I don't hold it.
The thing about this stuff, we spoke about this before, Pete, it's far more to it than just rubber gloves, mate. You know, it does coatings, it does building products, does carp it's involved in the carpet side of it, papers, additives, plastics, PVs, you know, PVC. So you look think about all those different sort of bits and pieces that it's involved in, all those different segments, right, Pete?
Yep.
Almost all of them with the reopening is going to be needed. So if there's a weak bit, there'll be a there's somebody else compensating for that bit.
Yeah,
Are you
yeah,
with me?
yeah.
So all those, I think they call them formulation. They call them formulations. That's right. They don't call them chemicals.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're in so many different pockets. And you know, if we've talked earlier about the infrastructure bill being passed in the US, you know, if they've got exposure to the US and all the other stuff that we're doing here. I think they could do quite well, mate. So they've got a 52-week low of 293 or thereabouts,
Yeah.
a 52-week high of £5.64, and it's currently sitting almost there at £5.60 and a half pence, up 1%, 1.3% today. So yeah, good call, mate. Good call again on that one.
I mean, the other interesting thing with that one's it could maybe be a takeover target.
Yeah. If it's doing well, as is often the case, year to date up 25%, Pete.
Yeah.
And over the past 12 months, 81.2% up as well.
Mate, another one, right? That's a lot of people won't have heard of, right? Because I hadn't heard of it until just the other day. Afarian. Do you know what Afarian is? Afarian.
Nope, I don't know that particular
It's
company, Pete.
AFRN, right? And it actually used to be Amino Technologies AMO.
Is that what's happened to Amino? Okay, all
There
right.
you go, it's now Afarian. So the interesting thing with this one is that I used to hold AMO a very long time ago. I think it was before I started doing Wheelie Dealer. So we're talking 6, 7 years ago, longer than that. And what I did a write-in, but what got me on it was that I thought that set-top boxes and IPTV boxes for old-fashioned televisions. I thought, well, you know, is that really a market? Because tellies were obviously going to more and more smart TVs that have got all the internet connection that built into the telly. Yeah, so I sort of thought, well, is there really a future for this? So that sort of put me off it, and I sold it. But anyway, I've always kept an eye on it, and I noticed the other day that they're really changing the business. It's become Well, to be honest with you, I can't tell you what it has become, but what I will tell you is that the business is very different to just set-top boxes. I think it's got much more software and other things they're doing. Have a look into it. It looks an interesting business and very, very different. Let me just check the numbers and stuff on it, because it certainly looked attractive. I'm just keying frantically into my little tablet. Right. Yeah. So it's coming up with forward PE, forecast PE of 16.5, dropping to 14.5 2 years out. Those are attractive numbers in this market. You're getting 2.2% yield next year, hopefully, and that's going to rise to 2.9 2 years out, hopefully. And it's got, well, it says on SharePad it's got 6 million of borrowing. I actually think it might be net cash now. I think it might have said in the latest results the other day.
Okie dokie.
But it's just, you know, it's just one that tickled my fancy, and it's one that, you know, probably worth having a look at, because it certainly looks interesting.
Okay.
Mate, here's one for you, right? This is really puzzling. Do you know a company called the Ince Group?
Yes, I do, Pete. I've heard of it. I've seen it being shared across Twitter.
Yeah, INCE. Mate, the question is, what is wrong with it? Why is it so cheap looking? Because on the face of it, it's not obvious.
I think you need to ask somebody on Twitter, mate, that holds a stock, who's researched it.
Well, it's just weird because it had some news today. I think today they were partnering up with another company, something about insurance and shipbroking or something, some sort of thing they would do, risk management or something. But it's amazing because you look at the the numbers on SharePad, forecast PE of 7.1. I mean, that is so low. Forecast PE 2 years out, 5.3. When you've got numbers like that, you start to think, well, there must be something wrong with it. It's got a forecast dividend of 6.5%, two-year forecast dividend 6.9%. What the hell is wrong with it? It says borrowing 19 million, it says on SharePad. Now, bear in mind, SharePad and basically all sources you're going to find on the internet give you the debt figure or the net cash figure from the last results. So the position now will be very different. From memory, the debt is actually a lot less than, I think it's like 6 million. So, I mean, it strikes me the company is very similar to something like Gately, GTLY, which I hold, yeah. I don't hold Ince because obviously I'm sort of terrified something's wrong with it. it's bizarre. It's either amazingly, astonishingly cheap, or it's an absolute crock of poo. I don't know what it is.
You're gonna have to go away and do some digging, Pete. I'm gonna talk about a stock I don't hold here, Pete. And we mentioned shipping costs and freight costs going up and going up 3-4-fold in the past six months. And we had the shipping services group, Clarkson, ticker symbol CKN. Reported really, really good figures on where are we now? Monday the 9th, and it's a FTSE 250 stock, and it was up, I think, 5% ish on the day after the firm posted a 30% increase in first half earnings, driven by strong trading across all areas of the business. So for the 6 months, pre-tax profits were 27.5 million gain against 21.1 million the previous year. I think that's worth keeping an eye on, because obviously they do a lot of broking in a sense of all the shipping that's required by various other entities. They do the brokerage service for that. And with, I think the stats that I read, something like 85-86% of the world trade is currently carried on ships, from raw materials goods to finished goods, electronics around the world. So they're in a really, really, really sweet spot at the moment. And we'll see if that continues, especially with the reopening. There's going to be shops reopening and so on and so forth going forward. So they might be in a very, very, very good and sweet spot, Pete, and they increase the dividend just a little bit as well. So, you know, I think the thing I was going to say, Pete, is that this particular company has been able to keep and continue and has raised its total dividend every year for the past 18 years.
See, so that's for income, incredible.
That's a solid one to have.
That's incredible when you think what we went through in March 2020. I mean, that's incredible.
Pete, forget about 2020, mate. We're talking 2008.
What? Yeah, mate, you nailed it.
Oh, you're going back to 2003.
Yeah.
They paid incredible. A dividend all the way through, even through and increased in 2007, 2008, 2009.
That's
pretty incredible, mate. Right, Pete, we're an hour and 10 in, so we're going to put two more in and then we're going to shut shop.
Well, can I just say about Clarkson very fast? I know a really big hitter in the city. He knows the management. He says they are really capable. Right, another one I'll mention very fast. Now, I was a little bit worried about this one because I thought it was one that was getting talked a lot about on Twitter, and that gets me worrying. But having looked at the share price chart, it hasn't really done much. That's SCS, the sofa people, yeah? Now, the absolutely bizarre thing about SCS, it's got £87 million of cash, right? And the market capitalization of the company, I'm just looking it up for you now, is not massively higher than that. Hang on. I'm stalling it, mate.
Market cap just shy of 119 million, Pete.
Yeah, so 119 million, and you've got 87 million of it covered as cash. I mean, if you look at the numbers on SharePad, right, the forecast PE is 10.2, rising a little bit to 10.4. But that is based on the 121 million market cap. If you think about enterprise value, where you take 87 million away from the 121 million, you know, you must be like on a forward PE of about 3. I mean, it's absolutely balmy. Either it's the cheapest thing since sliced bread, or again, it's absolute trash. It's one or the other.
Well, it's up 50% year to date, Pete, so it's had a very good run since January, and in the past 52 weeks it's up 80%. So someone that got in there early is obviously doing well. Again, it's one of those, Pete, we talked about people doing up their houses and spending money on this, that and the other because they've been bored at home and DIYing. It's one of those beneficiaries of lockdown, I think. Will that change when we come out of lockdown? Will people spend less next year buying new sofas and furnishings and so on and so forth? Who knows, mate? Who knows?
I mean, the obvious question with that is it customer deposits? But I had a quick look into it and I don't think it is customer deposits. So, you know, it's weird. I mean, I'm very wary about buying into a sofa retailer, but let's be fair to SCS. They got through March 2020. There were loads of upholstery companies and whatever who wouldn't have got through. So, you know, I actually think fair play to them for achieving that. And it could be really cheap.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing, Pete. I think people would sooner buy a new sofa because they're sitting in it and on it than they would buying carpet. You know what I mean? So what exactly will you choose? You choose get yourself a new set of blinds and curtains, and another sofa. So yeah, I think people have been doing a lot of that, and clearly from their recent update, you know, it shows that they're doing very, very, very well. So
it's weird. Yeah. It's weird, mate. We probably need to close it there, sir.
Yeah, we do. Is there anything you want to add, Pete?
Well, the only thing I might just chuck into the mix. Well, in fact, I won't.
Okay.
I thought I had another stock to mention, but I won't.
I want to close with just thanking absolutely every one of our listeners that embraced the podcast with Seth on Podcast 54. I want to thank everyone that subscribed to us as well on the various channels. And everyone that gave us such fantastic feedback is really good when we have a guest on and you guys and ladies just embrace the individual and what he has to share. Looking forward
to
sharing.
We'll have some
shame. I'm getting to that bit, Pete. Yeah. I'm looking forward to providing you guys with some insights from some female investors going forward. So I'll be able to say that she and her, that you'll embrace them when they come on going forward. I'm always conscious that a lot of the times that a lot of the things that we listen to are coming from males. And I'm always reiterating that as far as my research has provided me with, the best investors have always been female. So I will look to fill that void for all of you listeners going forward. That's all I've got to say. This is Twin Peaks Investing Podcast 55. My name is Peter Higgins at Conquers 3. You've been listening to myself and Peter at Wheelie Dealer. Take care of yourselves. Do what you can for your communities. Look after yourselves. Stay blessed. Take care. God bless.
Thanks. Bye.
This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast was brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit sharescope.co.uk and discover the advantage.